absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Again, everybody, Sunday morning, and if those are on the East Coast, here we go again. I'm talking about that dreaded white stuff that comes from the sky when it's too cold. Instead of rain, it turns to snow. On the East Coast, we're going to get a nice dose of it, unfortunately, again. 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, I am JT, a.k.a. The Master. And as always, this is The Master Plan. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to me. Well, for the first time in a long time, in quite a while, I am riding solo. All by my little self here. The Rev is doing his thing. He's got other obligations that he's taking care of. Victor, I don't think he's going to be around at all, too. So unless I get a call from the number I just spilled out there, you're going to listen to my voice from now until we get off the show, which is about 56 minutes from now. So, 57 minutes, whatever. It doesn't make a difference. We also have a chat room open. The chat room's for your convenience. Lay your question, make a comment, statement in the chat room. You bring it, you put it in there. Whatever you bring it, I'm going to bring it back to you. Okay? So if it's civil, I'll be civil. If it's not, well, you're going to have to suffer the consequences. Well, that's all I can say. That's all I can say. Let me talking about a little basketball, a little football, but I want to start getting into fantasy baseball also. So for those who've been gearing up, or even some of them probably have already, but to me it would be a little too soon. You have to wait a little bit. You're doing mock drafts of fantasy baseball? Let's start talking about fantasy baseball, because baseball season is right around the corner. Spring training is in effect for all the teams. They're starting to play exhibition games. So near the end of this month, which is March, this is the second day of March. Can't believe it. This is going into the third month already of this new year. By the end of this month, they'll be playing Major League Baseball again, okay? And winding down basketball not winding down, because basketball is going to go on until June. So I should just say that. College basketball, because it's going to be March Madness. Teams are ending up their seasons, and soon they're going to be getting into their respective conference tournaments. And then after that, they're going to be getting into their the NCAA tournament, the battle from the 64 down to the last two, and then eventually crowning the NCAA champion. Wichita State, first team to be undefeated in a number of years. You got to hand it to them. I didn't think Wichita State was that team, but they may be this year. They may be that strong. But that's down the road. We're going to talk about that in weeks to come when the tournament and the seeds finally play itself out. What I want to talk about, like I said, one of the first things I want to talk about is this. Now, you know, this guy is like this.
Let's go. Ain't no room for hesitation up in here. It's time to leave it on the field. Because it's game time.
And I'm talking about number three in your programs when he played for the 76ers. The answer, who had a storied and troubled, somewhat troubled career, on and off the court, by that means, was honored in Philadelphia last night. Talking about AI, Allen Iverson, was honored last night, and his number was retired. Put up in the rafters along between Maurice Cheeks and Charles Barkley. Excuse me. 20,000 roaring 76ers fans gave AI the standing ovation he earned by stamping himself as one of the franchise's all-time greats. And as you know, Allen Iverson, love him or hate him, he's an emotional player, emotional type of person, really. And he thanked his former teammates and friends at halftime against the excuse me, against the Washington Wizards. Now, hopefully, since he's been retired since in October, he's gone through a lot of things. He didn't play. He played his last game in 2010. He won four scoring titles, and was the 2001 MVP. He and that's the same year when his team went to the NBA championship. He never won a championship. That's the lone thing in his career that is going to eventually destine him to go to the Hall of Fame. The one omission is not having a world championship. But as I read, the Sixers turned that arena into an AI museum. They had banners that greeted the fans at the main concourse entrance, and photos of him were plastered all over the arena. Well, I mean, they're honoring him, man. What do you expect? They sold jerseys, Iverson jerseys, for $130 a piece. Even the lower level tickets were going as much as $1,280 on StubHub, and that was about just an hour before tip off. And believe it or not, oh, I can believe it. It was the highest priced 76ers home game ticket this season, because usually those tickets on average go for about $109. Now, pound for pound, even though I wasn't a big Allen Iverson fan, you gotta had to respect his name. I mean, his game, because of fact, he was very slight, 6'1", somewhere around there, give or take, and just threw his body around and gave it all he had. Even though one press conference that he had, talking about practice, not the game, but practice. We're talking about practice. Well, Allen Iverson was one of these great players that wasn't a great practice player. May have not, he participated in practice. May not even showed up in practice. But come game time, he was ready. Come game time, you got all of AI. AI stands for Allen Iverson, and when it was on, he was on the court, AI stood for all in. Because when he played, he was all in. Whoever he had on the court with him, he took it to wherever he could take it, no matter what, to try to get that win for his team. So love him or hate him, the brother could play. The brother could play. He may not have the best social skills off the court, and in retrospect, he'd probably be the first one to tell you that. But there's a lot of great players that were great in whatever sport they were in, but lacked something off the court, or off the field, or off the rink, or whatever playing profession that they were in. Once they weren't in that moment of playing their game, and had to interact with quote unquote regular people, like I said before, their social skills were a lot wanting. But it is what it is. You have to respect the man's game because he came to play, and he was at the top of his game. He was all that. So whether you liked him or nothing, AI, Allen Iverson, was all in on the court, like I said. Let me read a couple tweets that from two of the biggest names in basketball, LeBron James and Kobe Bryant. Now, he went against both these guys. And they know the storied career of Allen Iverson without a doubt. And here's the respect that LeBron James, he tweeted out, pound for pound, congrats, homie. What a pleasure to complete against you and also become a friend. Kobe Bryant, time has wings, my brother. Your game pushed me. Excuse me. Let me try this again. This is Kobe Bryant. Time has wings, my brother. Your game pushed mine, then 21-year-old self, to play beyond my years. Your impact on a game will be felt for generations. Hashtag salute. Hashtag respect. Hashtag 96. Hashtag AI. A lot of respect for Allen Iverson. And let me go back to LeBron James, because I didn't give you the full comment. Pound for pound, congrats, homie. What a pleasure to complete against you and also become a friend in the process. You, the reason why I got tattoos, wore a headband and arm sleeve. Thanks for everything. Hashtag AI the GOAT. Hashtag Bubba Chuck. Hashtag Hall of Fame or HOF next, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Pound for pound, one of the best players on the planet. And I'm not talking to him as him passing, but Allen Iverson is dealing with some demons right now, and hopefully like a lot of other players that have left the game and had issues off the court or off the field, he gets himself together and lives a long and a fruitful life and a productive life. Let me put it that way. Because besides himself, he has some sons and daughters that love and appreciate him. All right. Let's move on to Let's move on to the NFL. Now, all you people know. Well, if you keep up with football, you know this, that one of the things in this past week was Mr. Richie Incognito, who can't seem to stay out of the media limelight. This latest episode for Richie Incognito was that there was a police report. I don't remember reported, but the police were notified that someone had trashed Richie Incognito's Ferrari. Police responded. I guess they came to the scene, and it was determined that Richie Incognito had taken a baseball bat to his Ferrari. Now, for those who don't really know about Incognito, ever since he became in the league, he's had anger issues. He's moved from one team to the next. St. Louis Rams being one of them. Now the Miami Dolphins being a former team now, and he's always had issues, and was really a dirty player. And I'll have to say that because he was listed as a dirty player, and that he wasn't too nice a guy on and off the field. Well, you know that there was a few things that happened with the Miami Dolphins, and he no longer playing with them, and there's a strong possibility that he may not play football again with the team because of all the issues. Tweeting and whatever else he's been doing that really wasn't beneficial to his career. It probably all culminated, came to a head that he took it out on his Ferrari. Well, he's checked into a facility. And ongoing treatment at a he's undergoing treatment at a psychiatric care unit in Arizona where he stays, which he got checked in, I guess, around Thursday. Now, let me put it this way. One report from TMZ said that he had checked himself into the facility. Then a later report that his admission was not voluntary. Brent Romberg, a friend and a former teammate of Incognito with the Rams, told Miami radio station 104.3 and AM 790, the ticket, that he is concerned for Incognito and that his friend hasn't gotten back in touch with him for a while. This was a quote from Brett Weinberg. My wife Emily called me yesterday and was like, you need to call Richie. He said, this is really, really bad. This is the first time he hasn't answered my call and answered my text. I'm really, really concerned, like very concerned. Romberg said he fears for Incognito's safety. Another quote from him, no joke, no word of a lie, I'm really concerned. It was to the point now where I am very, very concerned. I'm trying to get a hold of his family now. Now, I discussed it yesterday. I'm going to discuss it again. Incognito's parents have divorced, are divorcing, and it is believed to have an impact on Incognito. A quote from Romberg, his parents are his backbone in life. He loves his mom more than anything. His old man loves him to death. His little brother, this is just bad, and I'm terrified that he might go about doing something really, really, really bad to himself. This is, now it's dangerous. I don't think he's going to go as far as to hurt other people now. Now I think it's just self-inflicted, just breakdown. And like I said, he resurfaced in the news Thursday when Scottsdale police, this is in Arizona, Scottsdale police, checking in a report of damage to the car belonging to him, said Cognito told an officer he did the damage himself. Scottsdale police, because it's his property, he didn't affect anybody else, have closed the matter because no crime was committed, because he's destroying his own property. So he owns it. If he wants to destroy it, that's on him. That's the whole crux behind that. Excuse me. Incognito told Fox 10 in Arizona later in the day that he was just venting when he smashed his Ferrari with a baseball bat. And then I guess a photo showed Incognito's car with several dents in its hood and a bat in front of the vehicle. A part of the bat was lodged in the car's grill. And this is a quote from him. Oh, that was just me venting. That was my self-expression. That's a piece of art, he told Fox 10. It's another quote. The happiest day of my life was when I got that car. And now the second happiest day is going to be when I donate it to charity. The Ferrari is a story unto itself, Incognito said later in the interview. The Ferrari is one entity, but I will tell you this. The Ferrari is going to be for sale through my mission, which is helping the Brotherhood, whatever Brotherhood it is. Now, an investigation conducted by Ted Wells, for people who have been following the story, determined that Incognito and two other teammates engaged in persistent harassment of offensive tackle Jonathan Martin, another offensive lineman, and an assistant team trainer. Wells' findings were released, determined that Incognito, two teammates engaged in persistent harassment of offensive tackle Jonathan Martin, another offensive lineman, and an assistant team trainer. And then, ironically, the findings were released on Valentine's Day, of all times to report to be released. Chicago receiver Brandon Marshall, a teammate of Incognito's in 2010 and 2011. Like I said, Incognito's been on more than one team. St. Louis Rams, Chicago Bears, Miami Dolphins. I'm sorry. My bad. I'm talking about he was with the Miami Dolphins and the St. Louis Rams. But Brandon Marshall, who has experienced his own struggles with psychological issues, said it was important to regard mental health issues as a medical condition. This is a quote from Brandon Marshall, who's had, if you followed Brandon Marshall's career, he's had issues off the field, some anger issues and some other things that are going on in his life. This is a quote. While I empathize with Richie Incognito and the difficulties he may be facing, at the same time, I commend him for acknowledging these issues and for the courage and willingness to seek assistance for them. It is imperative that everybody, not just athletes, understand that psychological issues are real health issues and not something to be stigmatized or ashamed of. Help is available. And help can change lives. The sooner we recognize this as a society, the better off we will be. Now, Brandon Marshall has made a huge turnaround in his life since he's acknowledged and able to address the type of issues that he's been having that were caused, for the most part, of the problems he had off the field. Because when Brandon Marshall was playing on the field with a lot of these athletes, like I keep on saying, there's no issue on the field. A lot of them. There's no issues on the field. It's only when they get off the field out of their that comfort zone, that out of that environment, that they have to deal with day in and day out normal life, is when they have issues, when they have problems. So we'll have to wait and see. And this story is yet to be the final chapter of this story has not been written yet. So Richie Incognito is right now an incomplete story, still an ongoing saga, let me put it that way. And we'll have to wait and see what happens with that individual. And also what's going to happen to the Jonathan Martin. Does he get back into the NFL? Does he get to a team? Will he be able to function in another environment, locker room environment in the NFL? What's the best spot for him to go? Now, in my opinion, I would think the best spot for him to go would be Indianapolis, his comfort zone. He's got a few teammates that used to play with him in Stanford, plus his old coach, and Pep Hamilton, who's the offensive coordinator for the Indianapolis Colts. That's probably the ideal situation for him to come back into the NFL to be a productive player. He would be having a huge comfort zone, and he would have a support of guys that would have more than likely have his back of former teammates and coach. And I think that's the best situation that Jonathan Martin could possibly have for himself is to do that. If it's going to happen, who knows? But in my opinion, that would be the best thing for him and all concerned about Jonathan Martin. And that's if he's ready to come back, because no locker room, I don't care what locker room it is, what sport you're playing in, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, locker room, all guys from all different walks of life, all guys from different economic backgrounds, all guys with different opinions of lifestyles that they lead. So you have to have a strong constitution. You have to have a strong backbone to jump back into that environment, because it's not going to be a perfect environment for the so-called the regular people, like you and I. And I've been in locker rooms before, a locker room is a locker room. There's a lot of difference from having a high school, maybe a college locker room, into a NFL. These are full-grown men. These are the best of the best playing football. So you got A-type personalities. You got huge egos. You got all these guys that strong opinions of themselves and the game. So you have to be ready for that. You can have all the talent in the world, but that's one of the things that you have to be able to be ready for as a pro when you're playing with the big boys now. It's no longer a college environment where you're getting paid to do a job. So guys take this seriously, because families and families of families are dependent on them. A lot of pressure. People react differently and are different when there's pressure put upon them. So that has to be taken into account. All right. Let me move on to this here. Let's talk about this, okay? You have – and I read this – I saw this article on ESPN.com and from Mike Sandel's blog. And it's very interesting to me because the caption is Texans, Rams, and Bucks – facing draft dilemma. As you know, if you've been listening to me or you've been listening to all the shows that I'm on, I'm a Houston Texans fan, okay? And quite naturally, the Houston Texans have wonderfully acquired, and I'm saying that sarcastically, the number one pick. And besides the number one pick, St. Louis has the third pick, and the Tampa Bay have the seventh pick. This is what, and you'll see what I'm talking about when we get to this. I want to talk about this. The dilemma in this article I have, saying that the this year, at least six of the first eight teams on the clock are looking for a long-term starting quarterback. Each of them got to decide whether any of the highest-rated quarterbacks is worth an early selection in a draft widely considered to be one of the strongest in memory at other positions anyway. And I truly believe that. The offensive tackles, I think they're pretty deep. Wide receivers, they're definitely deep in. And like I said, the Houston Texans get the first crack. And that's where this article is going to start with the leading draft dilemmas facing teams coming out of the combine. The number one question, should the Texans take a quarterback with the first pick? And I'm going to read some of this. It says, consider this hypothetical. Would you rather have a certain shot at $500 or a 50% chance at $3,000? Without getting too hung up on the exact percentages and dollar figures, that is what the quarterback dilemma can feel like in this draft, given the absence of a sure thing quarterback prospect. The seemingly sure bets in this draft take offensive tackle Greg Robertson or Jake Matthews, for instance, or near consensus top defensive prospects Jadeveon Clowney or Khalil Mack. Will never approach in value what a productive quarterback can offer, but even the disappointing first-round tackle tends to hang around a start for years. Levi Brown and Robert Gallery are two high-profile examples. Disappointing quarterbacks are much more likely to drag down a coaching staff and set back a franchise. Selecting a quarterback first overall isn't nearly as costly from a financial standpoint as with under the previous labor agreement. But if the Texans take one here, new coach Bill O'Brien will be declaring his hand at the position. And because of the fact, when you take a quarterback in the first round nowadays, that quarterback is expected to play now, not sit him on the sidelines and let him learn. That quarterback, because of what's happened in the past with Cam Newton, Andrew Luck, RG3, and this year Russell Wilson, even though he didn't win on his first year, but has success in his first year. Those quarterbacks that they get picked early are expected to play now. So that quarterback will need to win. And that quarterback, Bill O'Brien, if he picks the that quarterback, if the Texans pick a quarterback in the first round, Bill O'Brien will be expected to win with that quarterback, especially after team owner Bob McNair made it clear he feels as though the Texans are in a position to contend quickly. And that's not a decision to take lightly. So check this out. Six of the 21 head coaches hired between 2010 and 2013 joined teams that christened their new coaches era by selecting quarterbacks in the first round. Indy and Chuck Pagano landed Andrew Luck first of all in 2012. Carolina and Ron Rivera took Cam Newton first overall in 2011. Both QBs were consensus number one overall selections. Both have generally succeeded even without strong supporting cast. The four other first-year coaches in question worked for teams that took shots on riskier prospects. So Leslie Frazier and Mike Munchak lost their jobs in part because of the quarterbacks their teams gambled on. Christian Ponder in Minnesota, Jake Locker in Tennessee, both these quarterbacks I couldn't stand, and I've been on record on numerous shows that these are one of the worst quarterbacks, in my opinion, in the league, and I can't believe they were still starting at times on their team. Did not produce as hoped. Doug Marrone in Buffalo need vastly improved play from 2013 first-rounder E.J. Manuel this season. Joe Philbin in Miami need a lot of things, including improvement from 2012 first-rounder Ryan Tannehill. And I'm surprised that Joe Philbin still has a job, especially with the collapse of Miami and the things that happened in Miami, the Incognito and Jonathan Martin situation. So I'm in the text here that, you see, these three quarterbacks, four quarterbacks, Doug Marrone, four quarterbacks, and two of these coaches lost their jobs already because the ineffectiveness of the quarterback play that they took in the first round. This may happen to Joe Philbin, which I do believe it happens if they don't really have a really good year, and Doug Marrone if E.J. Manuel doesn't pan out. Will O'Brien feel good enough about any other quarterbacks in this draft to bet his future on one of them? They have to take a quarterback, right? One GM said, yes, they do, but not necessarily at the top of the draft. And this is what my contention is. And I'll be pounding on this, I'm going to be pounding on this. The Texans can come at this selection a couple of ways. They can target a quarterback under the thinking that they'll need a good one to overtake Luck and the Colts in the AFC South. Or they could just use the first pick on Clowney, also with Luck in mind. And that's the premise I'm going on. Going that route would allow the Texans to field a defensive line featuring Clowney and Watt, the better to harass Luck and compete in the division. Andrew Luck tossed five touchdown passes with just one interception and two victories against the Texans last season. That's my contention. It's a passing league. You have a passer in Andrew Luck that you have to contend with because he's in your division if you want to win a division. So you have to be able to put pressure on the quarterback, even if it's not Andrew Luck. I'll emphasize this again. It's a passing league. There's an emphasis on the pass rush. There's an emphasis defending the pass. Just look at the Super Bowl. Peyton Manning had the best offense in all of football. Had the best offense. Had four receivers. Three receivers and a tight end with 10 touchdowns or more. With over 1,000 yards or more. Well, I should say over 1,000 yards. So it went up against a defense that completely shut them down. The NFL is a copycat league. You can see what a good defense can do to a great offense. I shouldn't say good defense. A great defense can do to a great offense, to one of the best quarterbacks of all time in Peyton Manning. Shut them down. Pass rush and DBs, not necessarily linebackers, but complete defense. A complete defense with pass rush, linebacker support, and defensive backfield, cornerback, safety to support. The Houston Texans need to draft Jadeveon Clowney to be a bookend or to be a Batman, to be a J.J. Watt, the Batman, and Jadeveon Clowney be the Robin on that defensive line to increase the pass rush. You'll have Brian Cushing coming back. That's going to improve the linebacking core. So you have offensive pieces in place. You don't have an Andrew Luck, an RG3, a Cam Newton-type quarterback to draft with the first pick. So take a defensive player, which is more, less of a risk than taking a quarterback that, if he doesn't pan out, it's going to cost your job for one and going to set back the franchise for another. Take a pick in the second round. Maybe in the third round, but preferably in the second round, like an A.J. McCarron, who improved his stock, and I still believe this now, and I've been shot down more than once about this. I believe this kid's a winner. This kid is a winner, people. A.J. McCarron has won 2 college championships out of the toughest football conferences in the country, the SEC conference, and performed well. He only lost 3 games in his whole college career, 3 games, and he was a 4-year quarterback, meaning he was in college for 4 years. It wasn't like he came out in the third year or the second year. He came out, he played 4 years of college, so and under a very demanding coach. I'm telling you, I don't know how to emphasize it more. Jadeveon Clowney, in my opinion, under the tutelage of J.J. Watt and the rest of Texans on that defense, is going to be a monster. Let me put it this way. Mario Williams left the Houston Texans. And J.J. Watt emerged, okay, more than when Mario Williams was there. Well, you have, and this guy is compared to somewhat of a Mario Williams. They say that his motor isn't what they should be, but I don't believe that. That's pre-draft talk, trying to downplay him, trying to put a nick in a guy's armor, a chink in his armor, I should say. Take this kid. This kid, under the tutelage of those veterans on that team, that kid will come to play every single down. Every single down. Put those two guys in there. Pass rush. That's be unbelievable. You got to pick your poison. Either Clowney on one side or Watt on the other. You got to pick your poison. He's a freak. So it's bad that the Texans only won two games, but it's a good thing because you have a choice in who you may pick up. And it's a passing league. If you don't have a passer that warrants a number one pick, there's two things you can do. You can trade away the pick for more picks. We're further down, and I don't know what you want to do that. Or take Jadeveon Clowney and go pick up a quarterback in the second round. Because I do believe A.J. McCarron will be in the second round, and you'll be at the first pick in the second round. I don't think there's any team, because he's not being talked about, really. And you know, let me put it this way. From the people I talk to, they don't consider him that good a quarterback. But he improved the stock, and it was noted on more than one show. He improved the stock in the combine. So I do believe that he's the way to go. Number two. Should the Rams trade back from number two? Now, in my opinion, Sam Bradford is on the edge here. This is a make or break for Sam Bradford. Either he hasn't had the weapons, or he's gotten hurt. Now, if he's gotten hurt, that's a knock on him. He got hurt. Last year in college, he got hurt in college, and it seems he carried it through for the short time he's been into the pros. And the times he's been into the pros, he's been consistent at best. And a lot of people give him, I wouldn't say give him an excuse, but they have said that he hasn't had the weapons. Well, they're getting him weapons, and he's got a shot to get another weapon, whether it be a offensive tackle or a wide receiver, that's one of the downfalls of the offense for St. Louis, is a viable number one wide receiver. And they can pick up Sammy Watkins or someone else like that. Sammy Watkins is a consensus number one wide receiver. No matter how you view Rams quarterback Sam Bradford, the team is committed to him for 2014 at least. The GM has pointed out from the combine that Bradford has a 5-2 record, 5-2-1 record against the NFC West opponent since Jeff Fisher arrived as head coach. The Rams' commitment to Bradford makes them one of the teams selecting him on the top eight with a clearly defined starting quarterback already on the roster. Atlanta, with the sixth overall choice, is the other team focusing exclusively on other positions. Both the Rams and the Falcons are in a prime position to benefit if the other team's picking early over draft quarterbacks. If the Texans take a quarterback first, the Rams could feel great about taking Clowney second, and that would be a big mistake. Not for the Rams to take Clowney, but for the Texans to take a quarterback first. It might seem like overkill for a team already possessing first-rounders Quinn, Chris Long, and Michael Brockers on the defensive line, but in making this decision, the Rams should select the player their NFC West rivals hope they avoid. Will the rest of the division recoil at the thought of St. Louis adding a tackle or a receiver? A little bit. Perhaps, but not as much as they would if the Rams added Clowney to a defense that has collected a league-high 105 sacks over the past two seasons, 20 more than any other team in the NFL's most rugged defensive position. So the Rams have a heck of a pass rush. Would they benefit from taking Clowney? Of course they would. Do they really need him? Is that overkill? It may be. The Rams face a tougher dilemma if the Texans select Clowney ahead of them. They could select Auburn tackle Greg Robertson or Clemson receiver Sammy Watkins. But they've already got a starting left tackle in Jake Long, and this draft is loaded with so many good receivers that Snead said the 15th one selected might wind up starting. Like I said earlier, this draft got a lot of wide receivers with a lot of potential. Let me put it that way. I'm not saying all of them are surefire, but there's a lot of wide receivers in here that's got a lot of potential. Fisher and Snead could trade out of the number two slot, hoping to attract a team eager to jump past Jacksonville, which holds the third pick and could be targeting a quarterback. But if this draft is as deep as analysts think it is, why trade up at the expense of additional selections? That's what I'm talking about. Go after what you need, or the best available player. And the best available player to me is not one of these quarterbacks. Not one of these quarterbacks. Now, they may pan out to be good quarterback, but are they a franchise number one selection pick or number two selection pick? I don't think the Rams are going to pick a quarterback. I think they're going to go against an offensive tackle or a wide receiver. That's what I think they're going to do. That's the best available talent. Offensive tackle or a wide receiver. And I'd be leaning toward a wide receiver because I think that's one. They have a stable running backs. They have a good defense, 105 tackles, 20 more than any other team in their division. They have a need for a wide receiver or a tackle because Jake Long can't seem to stay healthy. So you have to go that route. And then it's the third dilemma. Should the Tampa Bay Bucks, who are picking seventh, target a quarterback? Four teams needing quarterbacks are scheduled to select before Tampa Bay. And that is the Jacksonville Jaguars, Cleveland Browns, Oakland Raiders, and the Houston Texans. Which I think the Houston Texans are not taking a quarterback first. So that takes three teams, which are, like I said, Jacksonville Jaguars, Cleveland Browns, Oakland Raiders, who are 3, 4, and 5 in that order, then along with Atlanta, and then Tampa Bay picking a seven. So that, and they have other needs that they should be picking up. So but and besides the Texans, Jaguars, Browns, and Oakland Raiders, picking right behind the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is the Vikings. So all must decide how much positional value should factor into the equation. If the Buccaneers think incumbent Mike Glennon is good enough to start, they can focus on landing a tackle, defensive end, or wide receiver. I think Mike Glenn, more development, different coaching staff, more development is going to be a very serviceable quarterback. Formula is this, and I keep on saying it over and over and over again. Play sound defense, run the football, use the quarterback sparingly. That's what Seattle's done. Just think about this, and I talked about this on the FSP show at 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time yesterday, on Saturday. Just think about this. Two of the most prolific offensive teams, two of the most prolific passing teams in the league have run the football more than they've ever run the football in the last 3 years. I'm talking about pass-happy Patriots and the pass-happy Green Bay Packers. Each one of both of those teams ran the ball and got a running back to run the ball, or running backs in New England's case, to run the ball effectively. So even though people may think it's a passing league, running back is a very important position. It's going to be used more and more in the future. especially the fact that Super Bowl champions, what they did was pound the football. They pounded the football and played sound defense. And they beat the much, much vaunted Bronco offense with that high-powered offense with running the football and playing defense. So why do you think the New England Patriots, and especially the Green Bay Packers, now the New England Patriots may have done that because the deficiencies they had in the wide receiver position. But that wasn't the case in Green Bay. The case in Green Bay was they wanted to be able to run the football, take pressure off the quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, so he wouldn't get hit as much, and make the passing game that much more explosive. So Mike Glennon, he may not be a big marquee name, but he developed and he was coming along, in my opinion, and will be a very serviceable quarterback if they stick to the formula that I'm talking about. Play sound defense, run the football effectively, play action, and don't put as much pressure on the quarterback to make so many plays. You're using the team concept as play sound defense, running the football, and the quarterback plays is minimal. It makes sense to me, and that's why I said the things I said about Houston. And you have to think about this. I believe that Lovie Smith, who likes to run the football and play sound defense, is going to instill that into his team. That's a winning formula. Now, it's not the quarterback Lovie would drafted, but I mean, because this will be his first year with the team, but he can work with this quarterback. It's a young quarterback, a young impressionable quarterback. He can get molded into the type of offense and the whole team concept Lovie wants. I don't know what else to say. You know, I use up all the time talking about this. I wanted to talk about baseball. I'm going to be talking about baseball. I apologize. I'm going to do talk. I went off on a tangent, and I didn't even rein my own self in. If someone else did, probably would have reined me in. But that's inconsequential now. It is what it is. I got about a minute and a half left in the show. I want to thank you for listening. Please tune in next week. I will definitely be talking about fantasy baseball. I'll probably have Red Fantasy back next week, and we'll be talking about fantasy baseball, which is going to gear up quickly. Drafts are going to be starting to roll out. Do your mock drafts. I can tell you that. Do your mock drafts. Do homework on the players so you prepare yourself for your draft, whether they're live drafts or whether they're online drafts or whatever type of drafts you have. But I implore you. Do your homework. Do mock drafts. It's very important you do mock drafts. You get a feel, even though it's not your actual draft, you get a feel of where players are going to drop. And I would suggest doing this. Do mock drafts in each position that you would have in your league, whether it's a 10-team league or a 12-team league. Do a mock draft and put yourself in the mock draft in the first position or the last position or anywhere in between. So you get a feel for where players may fall, or just get in a rhythm on what may happen in a draft. Now every draft is different. Your draft may be totally different than any of the mock drafts you do, but you get an idea, you have a feel for what may happen in the draft, and it makes it easier to adjust your strategy on the fly. With that being said, I want to thank you for joining me. For those on the East Coast, good luck in this storm. And for those, see you next week, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. As always, I am JT, a.k.a. The Master, and we're out.